Rob Perrell grew up in Cicero, Illinois. It's a working-class Chicago suburb, best known for its single-minded efforts to keep African Americans out, as intense and as forceful as anything seen in the Jim Crow South. In 1951, the governor called in the National Guard when for 3 days a mob threw rocks into the second-floor apartment of a black bus driver and his family who had just moved into the town. Martin Luther King Jr., who chose not to march there because officials told him they couldn't guarantee his safety, referred to Cicero as the Selma of the North. Perrell spent his teenage years scheming how he could run from a father who, for Perrell, came to represent all that was provincial and misguided about his hometown.
Cicero, Illinois, is profoundly symbolic of narrow-mindedness. And my parents were so glad to just do nothing other than live there. They liked Cicero. How can that be? We lived in this little house that looked out on the Metropolitan Sanitary District of Greater Chicago, where they processed all the refuse of the metropolitan area. You know, it's a huge factory, not a great thing to look at. And it's essentially a house of four rooms. There's two bedrooms, there's a living room, and there's a combined kitchen and dining room. And if you're a five-person family like we were, you're this tight little box you live in. And my dad was very happy living there. I have a skin disease called psoriasis. It covers my whole body. I convinced myself that I looked so bad that I would break off budding relationships with women, because I would say to myself, how can I possibly date her if I have so much psoriasis on me? And it's funny, you know, my parents took me to doctors. My mother's heart was broken over it. But I think, you know, the fact that I had this massive raging disease was practically not talked about in my family. Our dog in our family was the way we showed love to each other, because any one of our family members would lay down on the floor with the dog and talk to the dog and say, oh, I love you so much. You're such a good girl. And pet the dog. We didn't talk about things. You didn't talk about loving each other. You didn't talk about what your disease was doing to you. Then at the same time, you have these parents who are good people, and you just know that intrinsically. And then on the other hand, they can have this level of crudeness towards basically people who are different than you are. And the best example is their attitudes towards African Americans. So that I grew up basically using the N-word as a synonym for black person. That was just what you said all the time. And it was part of the legacy you had growing up in Cicero. And you grew up with all kinds of jokes about blacks. You know, watching a professional sports game, when a black guy drops the ball, well, you hear the N-word. And it's that he dropped the ball because he's black. And, you know, you hear this kind of stuff. But not just blacks. I mean, even in our family, we were Czech. All of my grandparents were Czech immigrants. In our family, the Polish were an inferior group to us. So you grew up with all these jokes about Poles. Now, I think talking about Poles and Czechs is kind of like splitting hairs, you know? And there aren't that many people where if you put a Czech next to a Pole, could really tell you the difference. As I got to my teenage years, because of that level of crudity, and because of other things going on in my life, having a disease that I felt trapped inside of, and which made me feel that I couldn't stand to be looked at, the mixture of those things just made me want to get very far away. And so I started to make this series of trips, starting in high school, far away. And I started to find that the farther I got away physically, honestly, the better I felt. And I started to think that happiness for me was a function of distance. And I just wanted to put as many miles as possible between me and my home and my family and Cicero, Illinois. To the point where in 1986, I was 25 years old. I bought one of these tickets that let me fly to Mexico and return from Latin America anywhere within a year, anytime I wanted. And I was going to have this freedom that I'd been looking for so long. And so I'm having exactly the experience that I wanted. And there was a Sunday afternoon where I went to a little public telephone in San Jose, Costa Rica, and I called home. And my dad answered. I said, so Dad, how's it going? And his voice breaks, and he says to me, well, Rob, the doctors have given your mother 6 weeks. My mother, you got to realize, had a bout with cancer. But I had convinced myself that it was over. So the next day, I fly back to Chicago. And really within just a few days, I'm back in Cicero, and my mother dies. So here I am. I'm back home, and I'm with my dad. My brothers are with family, and they live elsewhere. My dad and I had the house to ourselves. It was just him, me, and the dog. So we shared the house in a way we never had before. Just a few days after my mom died, I remember I came home. My dad was on the couch. I think the TV was off. He's smoking his cigarettes. He's scratching the dog. He's looking pretty terrible. I sat down next to him, and he said, "You know, if it wasn't for this dog, I'd go crazy. All I do is sit here and cry all day." My dad was never one to talk about his emotions or anything, and that was kind of compelling to me to listen to him say that he cried at all. And so I start to live with him, and I find that I'm sitting at the kitchen table having a cup of coffee at about 7 in the morning, and we're listening to the mourning doves on the electric wire that ran across our yard. And I hear my dad say, "I love those birds." And I never heard him say things like that. I have these memories of just simply, like, sitting with him for a few minutes in the morning with just the two of us and the sun coming up, and the house was totally quiet. Neither of us felt the need to talk, and it was perfectly okay. And I had never had this before. I'm living with him, and he starts doing my laundry every day. And he would give me my perfectly folded shirts and pants and ironed, and my underwear he would fold perfectly and hand it to me. My father was an Eagle. He belonged to a club in Berwyn, Illinois called the Eagles, and he went there a lot. He was like the bingo caller, and that was his social life. I'd go there to have a beer with him at the bar. You know, it was a sort of predominantly seniors and these old Czechs, you know? And you know what was clear whenever I went there was my dad was just loved by many people. You know, people liked Joe Perrell. He was the bingo caller, and he wasn't just anyone within this circle of people. Well, one night, kind of late, around 10 or 11 at night, my dad comes home. I was home. And he comes in the kitchen, and he's standing there a little drunk, and he's kind of just slightly weaving back and forth. And he's got this really big grin on his face, and his face is kind of red. And he sort of stammers to me, "Rob, I want to introduce you to somebody." And I say, "Okay." And into the kitchen comes this woman, whose name is Verge. Verge is an Eagle, too. And so that is the start of my dad having this new relationship with another woman. And I couldn't handle it. One day I came home fairly early in their relationship, maybe around 11 o'clock at night. And I'm walking up the front sidewalk to our house. And through the picture window, I see my dad and Verge sitting next to each other on the couch, you know, for all the neighborhood to see. And he's got his arm around her. And I freaked out. This is my dad. This is another woman. She's not even Czech. And the only thing I could do was get in the car again in my ma's cream Chevy Nova that I had inherited. The only thing I could do was get on the expressway, and I just started driving like crazy. And what became clear to me that night, I come back home unwillingly, start to get accommodated, start to find there's this wonderful side of my dad. Now I'm the third wheel. And I started one of my journeys of running away again. I moved to Washington, D.C. I just took off and I went there in a car. Even though the last thing I want to do is move back, I reestablish a relationship. It's the woman who I'm now married to, my wife Susan. And either she's going to move to where I had run away to, or I was going to move back here. And the move that made much more sense was for me to move back to Chicago. I did it. I moved back, and it coincides with this 11-month period in which my father began to die. And so I find myself having to go every single day to Cicero, Illinois, to our house, to take care of my dad, and essentially to help him die. One of the times I had to go sort of rushing back home and help him out, I was up on Lincoln Avenue in California in Chicago, way on the north side, and here my dad lives in Cicero, which is sort of on the south side. I remember just calling him up from a Dunkin' Donuts payphone and checking in with him, saying, you know, and I had things to do that day. How you doing, Dad? And he said, well, I got all these problems. My oxygen seems to be running low. And I just remember kind of swallowing and biting back something and saying, well, would you like me to come out there? And I remember him saying, you know, I wish you would. And that's always stuck with me. It wasn't just a selfish thing of I wish you'd come and help me. It really was, I wish you would be here. And one day my dad had this little stroke in the parking lot of a shopping center in Berwyn. And he falls to the ground, and a woman comes along and helps him, a black woman. She's very solicitous, asks him, should she call an ambulance? You know, are you all right, sir? She kind of dusts him off. She helps him in his car. He gets in his car, he's able to drive off. And he's telling me about this a few days later. And he's sitting there, kind of shaking his head, and he says, you know, I've been hating those people all my life, and now one of them comes along and helps me. And he said it with this certain irony in his voice by which it was clear he hadn't really hated them all his life, because my dad just wasn't a guy that hated people. He was recognizing that he had been very stupid all his life when it came to blacks. I didn't want my dad merely to stop being racist. Part of me wants a dad that wasn't working class. Part of me wants a dad who had had more education in his life. And part of me wants a dad who didn't spend his entire life in Cicero, Illinois. I guess, while at some times in my life I would have been just pissed at him about his attitudes, I grew to be able to chalk it up more to his environment. The other thing is that I lived with him as he grew older and died. I became a lot less concerned about his negative aspects, and I just became a lot more aware of how much in his life he had put together right, that he had his affairs in order. He had taken darn good care of his sons. His house was paid for. The things he owned worked and were fixed. It would have been divine to have had some kind of moment with my dad where he just said, it's been wrong for me to have all these racist attitudes all my life, Rob. I'm sorry for every time I ever used the N-word in front of you. It was just so out of the question that that was ever going to happen. You don't get that kind of thing out of a guy like him. That's important. But I found that when I moved back in with my dad that I could accept him for who he was. I saw a more complete picture of my dad. I didn't just see this negative side to him that had so much bothered me. You know, I saw his loving sides and his beautiful sides. And I think back about these two times I had to go back home. The first one had a saving grace to it, getting to know my father. The second time had no saving grace at all. It was nothing but pain. And the only thing I can say about the two return trips is that coming home was just the right thing to do.